Chapter 42. Kylar was dressed in servant's garb, and there were many new servants in the castle, as Terra's retinue meshed with the remnants of Gareth's, which had meshed with the remnants of King Gunder the Ninth's, so getting into the servant's entrance was no problem. Once inside, he headed to the scullery and grabbed a tray of freshly polished silver goblets, balanced it in one hand, and walked toward the great hall. In the bustle and hum of activity, and shouted orders and snarls of men and women under pressure, working together for the first time, no one paid any attention to him. He was invisible, not because of the Kakari, but because of the practiced anonymity Durzo had spent so many hours teaching him. For the moment, all of the tables were stored in the servants' room adjacent to the great hall. After the coronation, the tables would be carried in fully set. The goblets went into one of the high tables adjacent to the queen's table. Unfortunately, her table was still empty. It wouldn't be set until immediately before the banquet, and then, only under the watchful eye of the queen's guard, would her cupbearer lay out the castle's finest goldware for the high table with his own hand. These were not insurmountable difficulties. However, Terra Grayson didn't have a reputation as a drinker. So, if Kylar used a poison mild enough that her cupbearer wouldn't be affected when he tasted her wine, she might not drink a lethal dose. The same was true of her eating utensils. She was a dainty eater. So, after setting down the goblets, Kylar grabbed a pile of rags dirtied in polishing the tables and headed down a back hallway. He walked purposefully, though he had no idea where the castle's laundry was. He scanned the ceilings and walls for the spy holes and crawl spaces that honeycombed the castle. When he saw a crawl space, he leapt, grabbed the edge with his fingertips, and pulled himself up. Inches from his face, a decaying web of vear crisscrossed the opening. Kylar's fingers were almost touching it. Hanging on by one hand, Kylar rolled the Kakari through the web. The web popped harmlessly, like a soap bubble. From the secret passages, it was only a matter of finding his way. Kylar crawled or walked, as the passages required, and kept the Kakari over his eyes, so he could see every magical trap. In an hour, he'd found the royal treasury. The opening here was covered by stout iron bars. The Kakari made short work of that. You know, before you came along, assassinating a queen would have been hard.
Is that a complaint?
As the sheared bars came off in Kylar's hands, he stopped.
I'm like a god.
The thought jolted him. For some reason, it was the look on Blue's face that did it. Perhaps children didn't bother to cover their awe. Or perhaps it was that he had been a Blue himself not so long ago. But as he thought about the awe in the Guildrat's faces, he remembered the other faces. Cairnavon's Shingas, Hugh Gibbet's. Even the God King's face had held a note of awe. For the Guildrats, it was a dream. For the others, a nightmare. But the incredulity was the same. He was the impossible. For some reason, it had never sunk in. He was still Kylar, maybe still Azoth underneath it all. But now, this was so easy. Kylar had longed to be more than Guildrat. He'd longed to be more than Wet Boy. Now, he was more than a man. The rules didn't apply to him. He was stronger than a man, faster, 100 times more powerful, immortal. Death was temporary. If the most basic mortal concern, dying, didn't apply to him. What else didn't? It was an intoxicating thought, but a lonely one. If he was more than a man, what communion could he have with men or women? The thought brought Eline sharply to the fore. His chest felt hollow. He would give his other arm if he could be with her again. His head in her lap, her fingers running through his hair, accepting him. Odd, that. He could think of Eline with love, but as soon as his thoughts wandered near the hazy line of appreciation and desire, there was Vi with her red hair nearly glowing, the curve of her neck begging to be nuzzled, her eyes a challenge, nubile figure tempting him. He could sense her, somewhere far to the east. She was sleeping. Sleeping? At almost dinner time? Life in the Chantry must not be so bad. He imagined slipping into bed with her. Her hair was unbound, spilling over her pillow like a copper waterfall. Her hair was glorious, like some god had captured the last rays of the dying sun and given them to her. Kylar leaned close and inhaled deeply. Vi sighed in her sleep. She burrowed into him, her body conforming to his. His breath caught. For a moment, he swore he wasn't wearing any clothes. Then they were back. Vi let out a moue of disappointment. What the hell am I doing? Certain now that he was indeed clothed, Kylar relaxed, fractionally. Vi's breathing was slow and even. Kylar brushed a lock of hair behind her ear to see her face. She looked somehow smaller, more fragile, but no less beautiful. Without the customary tension, her face looked younger. She looked her age. Unlike Tara Grayson, whom sleep paled. Sleep lent Vi's figures grace. Tara Grayson. The castle. Where the hell am I? Seeing goose flesh rising on Vi's arm, Kylar pulled the blanket up over both of them. He ran a hand gently from her shoulder down her arm. His hand continued down her hip to her leg. She was wearing a loose, short shift, and he stopped when his hand touched her warm, smooth skin. Then his hand came back up her leg, under her shift. He was a man out of control, his pulse pounding in his ears, the room indistinct, thoughts indistinct, only his nerves alive. Her leg was lean, tight, even in sleep. He trailed his hand over her hip. His fingertips glided over the depression between hip and navel, and then over her dancer's stomach, the perfect blend of warmth and soft over hard. He traced her lowest ribs as she breathed, still evenly, though perhaps not so deeply as before, glorying in her. Kylar wasn't tall or thickly built, but Vi's slender form against him made him feel strong and tender and manly. He leaned close, breathing her in, and then he kissed her neck. Goose flesh rose, and this time he knew it wasn't the cold. He kissed her again, tracing her hairline. His fingers brushed the underside of her breast. Her back arched, grinding her buttocks against his groin. He was naked once more, and her shift had ridden up. She was hot against him. Yes. Her whole body whispered. Yes. A key grated in a lock. The sound was out of place. Then the other key grated, popping open a second lock.
Kylar!
I'm back. Sorry, I was elsewhere.
I'm in your body, Kylar. Some things you can't hide from me. Tumescence is one of them.
Tumescence? What? Oh, God! I didn't want to know that. Below, through the screen, Kylar saw the door to the treasury open. An officious little man clucked as he gazed around the barren room. There were only three chests. He opened the smallest, and Kylar caught a glimpse of the crown. But the man sighed.
Where the hell is that pillow?
He muttered. He went out, closed the door, and began locking the locks. Kylar pulled back the screen and dropped into the room, landing silently almost on top of the chests. He pulled the stopper out of the vial, formed the Kakari into its bulb shape, and drew out a generous dose of Phylodunamos. He stopped the vial and tucked it back into a pouch and grabbed the crown. It was a simple, elegant piece, with only a few emeralds and diamonds on it. From the paucity of precious stones and gold in the other chests, Kylar guessed the simplicity had not been a stylistic choice. He modified the Kakari even as he pressed the bulb, giving it a narrow brush as its tip rather than a needle. As quickly as he dared, he drew a narrow band around the inside of the crown, with a glob at the back. As soon as Tara Grayson began to sweat under the gold band on her forehead, the bottled fire would wreath her head in flames, and the glob would cause a small explosion into the back of her head. He didn't want Tara Grayson to be publicly burned. He wanted her dead. If she lived, the people's pity might offset their negative feelings for a time. If she lived, she would accuse Logan of the deed and execute him. The Phylodunamos went on evenly and dried quickly. The first lines Kylar had painted took on a flat gold sheen, close to the color of the crown itself, although Kylar could see some ridges in it. He hoped the damn stuff didn't flake off. Still, he didn't guess that anyone was going to be putting it on before the coronation. It should be fine. He heard a key in the lock at the same time he noticed that the glob of paint at the back of the crown was still wet. Unthinking, Kylar blew on it. He cut his breath off instantly, but saw one hard edge crack open and turn red. It glowed like a coal for a moment, then dimmed, even as a key rattled in the second lock. Kylar set the crown down gingerly in the chest and widened the Kakari into a fan. He fanned the crown furiously as the key clicked open the third lock. He drew the Kakari over himself, disappeared, and tried not to breathe. The officious little man held a purple velvet pillow with long gold tassels off the corners. He closed and locked the other two chests, then lifted the crown reverently with two hands, keeping his fingers on the outside, thank God, and placed it on the pillow. He walked out of the room. Kylar jumped back up to the open screen, pulled himself into the crawl space, and headed for a place to change into his nobleman's clothing. Tara Grayson was dead. She just didn't know it yet.